This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Futuro.
Dear listener, this episode mentions an incident of sexual violence, and we wanted to let you know that ahead of time.
Women tend to stay in small rooms that are rented, you know, not so much in the shelters if they have the option. Women tend to try to get false documentation that will help them get on buses or ride in cars or go around checkpoints, walking, that kind of thing, but in different routes than men would traditionally take. You know, the women who I've talked to over the years, they absolutely are thinking about how to protect their bodies, but also how to use their bodies to move through extremely difficult situations.
From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, She Migrates, the stories of women's journeys to the United States. In a new migration reality, women and children are requesting asylum in Mexico in higher rates than men. But even as more and more women are crossing borders on long and dangerous journeys, many hoping ultimately to get to the United States, you rarely hear about their stories and what it's like specifically to migrate as undocumented when you're a woman. For women, their body takes on a central role when they're in transit, regardless of their age. Some are forced to disguise their gender for their own protection. Others end up using it as a form of survival. And many are victimized because of their gender. Also, since they're mothers, many will end up carrying their children with them. Latino USA editor Marta Martinez and reporter Alejandra Sanchez Insunza traveled to Chiapas in southern Mexico. And here is their reporting about migrant women in different stages making their way north. Part one, girlhood, the body as disguise. Marta Martinez is going to take it from here.
It's midday in Palenque, Chiapas, and it's very hot. There's a group of some 8 boys sitting on the sidewalk, cramped under the shade of a small tree, just yards away from the migrant shelter where they spent the night. A few days earlier, last May, they had left Honduras, their home country, crossing first into Guatemala and then into southern Mexico. They walked more than 100 miles through the humid, mountainous jungle to get to the city of Palenque, mostly known for its Mayan ruins, but also, especially to migrants, as one of the few cities along Mexico's southern border with shelter facilities. The boys are between 15 and 21 years old. They all have the same destination goal. One of them even wears it stamped on his Converse sneakers, the red, white, and blue pattern of the U.S. flag. One of the boys has a fresh haircut, the bottom half of the skull shaved, the top half tied in a high bun. It takes a while to realize that he is actually a girl. Her name is Amaya. Amaya recently turned 15, but she didn't celebrate with a big party like girls in Latin America usually do when they turn this age. Less than a month after her birthday, she packed her things in a backpack and left her parents' home in a rush, joining a couple of friends and 2 distant cousins. She left with 5,000 lempiras, some $200. But when we talked, she already had no money left.
¿Cuál es tu sueño?
Llegar a la USA.
¿Y por qué? ¿Por qué allí?
Bueno, allá es diferente, va, se gana más. No es como en Honduras y va a ayudarle a mi familia.
Her dream is making it to the United States, where she believes she'll be able to work and earn more money than she could ever do in Honduras. In her hometown of Santa Barbara, there are no jobs. There's nothing, Amaya says. Honduras is the most unequal country in the Americas. 60% of the population is poor, and for over a decade, the country has held one of the highest murder rates in the world, especially against women. And one in six girls has experienced sexual violence. Its population is also very young. Almost half of all Hondurans are younger than 20. But the increasing violence by organized crime, the unsustainable extortion and recruitment by street gangs, high unemployment and inflation are leaving young Hondurans without opportunities in their home country. If all that wasn't enough to push thousands of Hondurans to migrate every year, in 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic and two devastating back-to-back hurricanes sunk Honduras even deeper, driving even more people like Amaya to leave. In the first 7 months of 2020, 904 unaccompanied minors requested asylum in Mexico, almost double the number for all of 2020. The vast majority were Honduran children. Amaya had her hair cut for free at the migrant shelter in Palenque the day before we met her.
¿Por qué quisiste hacerlo?
Bueno, ahí es una ventaja, ¿no? Porque así no se distingue mucho uno. Y es mejor, lleva un gorro también.
The short hair is an advantage, Amaya says, because she doesn't stand out. On the road, she wears a gray hat, leaving only the shaven half of her head exposed. Her black t-shirt is actually more revealing. It has a Minnie Mouse bow printed on her chest, and a pink bra strap peeks out from her t-shirt neck. On the migrant road, being a young woman is an added risk, and Amaya knows it.
¿Te da miedo andar solita con tanto hombre?
Voy con ellos. Ellos son buena onda conmigo y ya no me dejan botada. Voy con ellos.
Pero aún así tienes que ir con cuidado, ¿verdad?
Sí, siempre. Pero yo no me despego de ellos. Ahí vamos juntos. Yo voy en medio de todo.
Amaya knows that men prey on girls like her and that she must stay alert at all times. She feels safe with this group of boys, though. She says she trusts they won't abandon her. When they walk together, she always walks in the middle. On their long treks across southern Mexico, migrants try to walk in big groups to avoid getting mugged, kidnapped, or worse. Women and girls are also overwhelmingly exposed to sexual abuse and targeted by traffickers. It's hard to find reliable data on sexual violence against migrant women because they don't usually talk about it, and they're often too scared to file police reports. According to Mexico's National Health Institute, almost half of women migrating through the country have been sexually abused or have exchanged sex for food, shelter, and anything else that would help them along their journey. It's even harder to find data on human and sex trafficking, one of the most obscure criminal networks in Mexico and in many other countries. One of the few reports available is the U.S. State Department's Trafficking in Persons report, which shows that in 2020, almost 80% of 673 victims identified in Mexico were women and girls. The figure barely scratches the surface, advocates say. When Amaya left Honduras, she had already dropped out of school. She says that it took her half an hour to get there, and she didn't like her classes very much either. She enjoyed babysitting, though, especially taking care of her niece, who still calls her mom.
A mi hermana le cuidé a la niña desde tiernita. La niña me dice, mamá me dice, aún todavía.
Amaya says she'd like to have children one day, but not until she's 25, because it's a lot of hard work.
La que tenga los 25. Ya mayor de edad. Por los momentos, no sé, mucho cuesta, no crea.
In Honduras, one in four girls has been pregnant at least once before turning 19. The morning after, we meet Amaya and her group at 4:30 in the morning.
Buenos días.
It's still pitch dark outside, but they want to get going before the sun is too harsh. Their goal for the day is getting to Salto de Agua, which is 35 miles away, because that's where the next migrant shelter is. They sip some black coffee in plastic cups and smoke cigarettes. The group has shrunk a bit. Some didn't want to wait and decided to leave the evening before. There are now six boys plus Amaya. Their ultimate goal is to jump on La Bestia, or the Beast, the train heading to northern Mexico. Part of the train route in Chiapas has been discontinued to give way to El Tren Maya, a big federal infrastructure project. So now migrants have to walk an additional 220 miles to the first train station in Coatzacoalcos. The group walks following the train tracks, increasingly covered by weeds and stones due to the lack of use. Several of them, including Amaya, hold thick wood sticks the size of baseball bats to protect themselves in case they're attacked. And that sound in the background? Those are the howling monkeys hiding in the luscious trees. You rarely see women walking on the train tracks by themselves, let alone teenage girls like Amaya. And when they do, they hide their gender. We meet the group again in Salto de Agua, the day after their 14-hour trek.
Bueno, campeones, eh? Increíble.
There are now only four boys plus Amaya. Two of them decided to continue on their own, no breaks. But Amaya isn't feeling well. She needs to rest a bit. She looks exhausted and her feet are very swollen. Amaya says that for a moment she thought she wouldn't be able to make it. Her friend had to drag her. She got sunburned, her head hurt. She tells us that she needs a favor, but she's ashamed to tell us what it is. Amaya has just gotten her period and asks if we could help her get contraceptive pills to make her period stop. A similar hike awaited them the next day, and she couldn't walk like this anymore. We tell her that pills won't really stop her period right away. But what about tampons?
¿Tampones? ¿Tampones?
No. Pero es que no puedo andar así. Porque más que ando desafornada, porque ayer ya por eso venía que más ya no quería caminar.
Amaya has never used a tampon. At the shelters, they only have sanitary towels. And Amaya says they're very uncomfortable in this hot weather.
As people grow, especially in adolescence, women are so, so vulnerable.
This is Gretchen Kuhner, director of the Institute for Women in Migration, based in Mexico.
We've seen all different kinds of violence, you know, starting with extortion, which is just the highest. And then women also have the extra vulnerability of sexual violence.
Many times, though, women don't realize when they're victims of sexual violence.
Some women are so accustomed to being touched. Other women will say, well, the truck driver gave me a ride from Tapachula to Saltillo. And so, of course, in exchange for that, I had to sleep with him. But that's not sexual violence. That's sexual violence.
A recent change in Mexico's immigration law has directly impacted girls and boys traveling alone. Since January of this year, minors cannot be held in immigration detention centers. Now they must remain under the supervision of Mexico's Child Protective Services, known as DIF. Child rights activists have been pushing for this for over a decade, but its implementation has not resulted in the kind of change advocates expected.
What we have is a situation in which there's, especially in Chiapas, you know, where there's just the largest flows, a lot of confusion about who should be doing what, insufficient resources.
Because Child Protective Services are overwhelmed, they send many of these children to private shelters for immigrants, which are also overcrowded, and where living conditions might not be up to standards, especially for unaccompanied children. During our reporting in Chiapas, two shelter coordinators said that they had stopped accepting unaccompanied minors from DIF because they were, quote, too hard to deal with. Many have suffered violence or sexual abuse. They can be aggressive or unruly due to that violence and need special attention, the coordinators say. And the shelters don't have enough resources nor trained staff to help them.
Some of them, they receive a cursory interview and then they're turned back over to the National Immigration Institute and they're returned to their countries of origin. The word I think that everyone understands would be deportation. But I also have the sense that, especially with unaccompanied children, that some of them are being released because if they can't be in immigration detention, there's no, you know, capacity to go through the correct system, then they're being released.
Still, Gretchen thinks keeping minors out of detention centers was the right thing to do.
So we have the right framework now, but we don't have the right resources. And there's also, you know, the larger issue, which is that we have to think regionally. A lot of parents and family members of children in our region are in the United States. And if it's in their best interest to be reunited with those family members, we need to accept that as a region, because there's regional responsibility for the reason that we're in the situation in the first place.
Coming up on Latino USA, the rise of migrant child trafficking. And then a group of women and the choices they make when their body is the only currency they have to pay for their journey north. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo. Modern management made simple. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. And before the break, we met Amaya. She's a teenage girl from Honduras, migrating on her own and hiding her gender for protection. We continue the journey across southern Mexico now to learn about the experiences of migrant women, now in the city of Tapachula. Editor Marta Martinez picks up the story from here.
At Jesús el Buen Pastor shelter in Tapachula, the city with the highest number of migrants and asylum seekers, we meet another 15-year-old girl from Honduras who is also on her own. We're going to call her Cristina. Olga Sánchez, the coordinator of the shelter, says that a coyote had charged the girl $2,000 to get to the United States, where she has a brother she's trying to reunite with. But the coyote tried to sell her and then abandoned her in Guatemala, the coordinator says. Cristina is shy and afraid of talking.
Bueno, no, mi familia me abandonó, entonces por eso.
Her parents abandoned her when she was a child, she says. She grew up with her grandmother. More recently, a criminal gang started harassing her.
Porque me quisieron como violar, algo así. Entonces, en la noche, cuando yo fui a la pulpería, ellos estaban escondidos. Entonces, me dijeron que si no salía el siguiente día, me mataban. Entonces, decidí venirme para acá.
The gang members tried to rape her, Cristina says, and they threatened to kill her if she didn't leave the country the next day.
Alisté mi maleta y luego me vine preguntando. 3 días caminando y luego en eso, trailer.
She packed her things and left. She walked and hitchhiked for 3 days. During those 3 days, Cristina says, she didn't sleep.
Porque era peligroso quedarse dormido. Pues, bueno, a mí lo que me decían que no me quedara dormida porque podían pasar hombres, algo así. Entonces, por eso.
Cristina says she didn't sleep because she had heard that men could attack her. Olga says the number of teenagers arriving at the shelter has grown in 2021, and so has teenage trafficking.
Viene mucho adolescente ahorita. Hay una trata de adolescentes. Y está horrible, está esta frontera ahorita. Este es el momento más peligroso para los adolescentes y los niños.
She's been doing this job for over 30 years, and she says it's never been this dangerous for migrant teenagers and children before. The shelter rarely commits to taking in unaccompanied teenagers because they can't guarantee their safety.
Porque no los podemos estar cuidando que no salga. Porque el pollero los persigue. Los de trata persigue a los niños. A los migrantes haz de cuenta que es el signo de pesos para todo mafioso.
Traffickers are waiting for them. They go after them, Olga says. When traffickers see migrants, they see money signs.
Part 2, Adulthood, the Body as Currency.
The main square in Tapachula is always busy. Many of the people sitting on the benches, selling food, or cleaning the sidewalk are migrants from Central America and the Caribbean, but also from farther away, including African countries and India. Tapachula is also a big bottleneck for people who cross into Mexico through its southern border, often on their way to the U.S., which is still more than 1,100 miles away. The majority of migrants asking for asylum in Mexico do it in this city, but the number of requests has grown so much in recent years that the process can take up to a year. That's why so many of them get stuck here too. In the first half of 2021, Mexico received nearly 52,000 asylum requests, and more than 35,000 of those were filed in Tapachula. The numbers are already 25% higher than those of all of 2020. The country with most applicants is Honduras, with 44%, followed by Haiti, Cuba, El Salvador, and Venezuela. But Chiapas, where Tapachula is located, is also the poorest state in Mexico. So job opportunities are really scarce for migrants who are waiting for their humanitarian visas or simply making a stop to earn some money after having spent everything they brought or being extorted by the local police in Guatemala before they crossed into Mexico. For some migrant women, their body becomes a currency. Some choose to look for clients on their own, often at the main square. Many others are forced into it, but it's hard to know exactly how many. Here's Gretchen Kuhner from the Institute for Women in Migration again.
We've seen all different kinds of trafficking along the migration route in Mexico. So little is known about the different types of criminal structures that exist that force women into trafficking situations who might begin in a situation in which they're leaving their country. Maybe they're traveling with a smuggler, and then from the smuggling situation, they're trafficked. And it could be in Tapachula, you know, or other towns along the southern border of Mexico. We've also had a couple of cases of women who are kept in safe houses So they're not allowed to leave. So they're in a trafficking situation, but their job is either it's sex trafficking, you know, for the smugglers themselves, or it could even be you're not allowed to leave and you have to help us cook or clean or other kinds of domestic work that is needed in any kind of a situation, even if it's a criminal encampment.
But for migrant women, there are also situations where the way they use their bodies as a currency is blurrier. Las Cubanitas is one of those places. It's early on a Wednesday afternoon, and the waiters are setting up for the evening at this bar in the north of Tapachula. Some four girls in tight pants and lace tops or mini dresses start coming in. They wear heavy makeup despite the unbearable humid heat. They sit around one of the wooden tables, and for the most part, they look at their phones. A woman in a breezy white dress and curly hair is behind the counter. Her fingers are full of rings, and her nails are long and manicured. Her name is Flor, and she's the owner of the bar. She explains how Las Cubanitas works.
Ellas vienen a trabajar, y si ellas gustan, si ellas desean, y... pues aquí los comensales o los clientes, como les decimos, les hacen la invitación a que si gustan un refresco, un agua, un jugo, una copa, una cerveza, y ellas acceden, pues es una forma de ganarse una propina.
According to Doña Flor, she pays the women who work for her a basic daily salary of 200 pesos. Some 10 US dollars for 8 hours of work. But they make most of their money off tips. Clients, basically men, can buy the women drinks, but only if the women want to, Doña Flor says. The women's drinks are much more expensive than the regular ones. Each costs 185 pesos, so a little over $9. Almost as much as what Doña Flor pays them for a day of work. The women get to keep 165 pesos, or a little over $8 from every drink. Doña Flor takes the rest. Most of her profits really come from the drinks clients order for themselves. Both Doña Flor and the women told us that only if they choose to, in exchange for the drinks men buy for them, they spend some time chatting with them, having a laugh. Sometimes the women also dance with them, or they let them touch their bodies. At any time, the women can leave the table if they feel uncomfortable, both Doña Flor and the women say. The waiters at Las Cubanitas are all men, and they also keep an eye on the women who work there. Whether or not women have sex with clients, that's up to them, Doña Flor says, and they cannot leave the bar during their working hours. There are some 10 women currently working at Las Cubanitas, but despite the name, only two of them are actually from Cuba. Most of them are from Central America.
Ellas vienen de Centroamérica, algunas caribeñas, vienen a trabajar acá con nosotros, salir adelante, luchar por su futuro, porque pues en su país está muy difícil.
Many of the women have children who depend on them, Doña Flor says. That's why they have to do whatever job they can or decide to do.
Por eso es que ellas tienen que trabajar. Trabajar de la forma en que ellas puedan o que ellas decidan para poder solventar esos gastos.
Two girls started working at Las Cubanitas just 5 days earlier. One of them is Katy. She's from Honduras, and she wears a nude lace top that matches her high-heeled shoes. Her nails match her clothes too, an intricate design in gold, orange, and brown tones. She has been living in Tapachula for over a year and a half. Her dream, though, is making it to the U.S. Katy says this is the first time she's doing this kind of work, and she doesn't like it.
No, yo la verdad no quería. No me gusta este ambiente. Pero pues la necesidad, tengo que mantener a mi nena, tengo un departamento que pagar, tengo un hijo en Honduras también para mandarle dinero. Y tengo mi madre también.
Katy says she's doing it because she has to take care of her six-year-old daughter, pay rent, and send money back to Honduras. Her older child, an eight-year-old boy, is still there, living with her mother. Life in Tegucigalpa, the capital of Honduras, became unsustainable for Katy when a gang began forcing her to pay an extortion fee.
Y aunque venda o no venda, tiene que darle la cuota que yo digo. Si no, pues tu vida corre peligro.
They asked for $100 a month, an amount she couldn't make by selling tortillas. Her life was in danger, so she left the country with a friend.
Regresé yo a mi país a traer a mi hija, porque pues ella lloraba mucho, que me extrañaba y todo eso. Y pues yo no soportaba porque nunca me había separado de ella.
But shortly after, Katy went back to Honduras to pick up her daughter. The girl missed her too much and would cry all the time. It was the first time they had ever been apart. Before Las Cubanitas, Katy was working at a burger joint in Tapachula for 800 pesos per week, about $40. Sometimes it wasn't enough to feed her daughter, let alone send money back to Honduras.
Hubieron ocasiones, pues, que yo lloraba de tristeza en la noche. Porque a veces mi nena me decía, mami, tengo hambre. Y yo, ¿qué puedo hacer? ¿No? Es difícil. Es muy difícil.
At the bar, Katy can make more money in one night than what she did at the restaurant in 1 week. And she says they treat her better, too. If she has an emergency, they're flexible.
Y aquí el trato es súper diferente de por parte de los jefes. Nada que ver con el trato de allá. Son muy amables. Y cuando, pues, a veces tengo una emergencia, pues ellos no dudan en decir, ¿no?
It's not been easy for Katy to get used to this kind of work and to make sure that men respect her.
Es que dependiendo, porque si tú te das a respetar desde el principio, te respetan. Pero si tú te dejas manosear desde el principio, lógicamente ellos lo toman como, ah, y aquí ya tengo la oportunidad. Pero en mi caso, no.
She hasn't told anyone about her new job, not even her daughter, who thinks Katy works selling tacos.
Y ahí lo tengo que llevar los taquitos porque yo no le puedo decir acá. Luego, oye, la vez pasada me sintió olor a alcohol y le tuve que decir, es que me tomé un jugo todo dañado. Mami, entonces vamos a orarle a Diosito para que ya no te vuelvas a tomar otro jugo así.
While she works, the woman who first offered Katy shelter in Tapachula takes care of her daughter. She's an angel, Katy says.
Para mí es un ángel ella. La verdad, la quiero mucho, la quiero como a mi mamá. Porque ha sido una persona de que, en cierta forma, se ha portado mejor que mi propia familia.
Sitting on the table with the other women, there's also Caridad, one of the only two Cubans around. She's 24, restless, and has a piercing that crosses her tongue horizontally. She hasn't told anyone about her new job either. Caridad has only been in Tapachula for a couple of weeks. She applied for some jobs, but they asked for an identification document she didn't have. A friend who had worked at Las Cubanitas told her that they were looking for women. In Cuba, Caridad worked at a daycare center, making $16 a month. She left for Brazil with her cousin, looking for a better job. But her goal was always the United States.
Mi objetivo en realidad es llegar a Estados Unidos para trabajar y recompensarle a mi familia igual lo que han hecho con mí.
In late March, Caridad and her cousin left Brazil and ventured into a dangerous journey that took them through 9 or 10 countries. Caridad has lost count. The worst part was crossing the Darién jungle, a wild territory between Colombia and Panama that is considered among the most dangerous migrant routes in the world, not only because of the rough mountains and wildlife, but also because of the presence of criminal gangs. Caridad accidentally lost track of her cousin the day they entered the jungle. And then the group she was walking with got stopped by a band of armed men.
Y apuntando con la pistola y Dios mío, y todo el mundo, y con las manos arriba, y todo el mundo con las manos para arriba, y con las mochilas. Yo estaba, ay Dios mío, yo nunca había visto eso, nada más que en película. Y dice, ay Dios mío, Virgen de la Caridad.
The men took their backpacks and then they selected 3 women from the group. One of them was Caridad. Another one was a 13-year-old from Haiti.
Escogieron a la que le dio la gana, a mí, una muchachita y otra muchacha. Y nos violaron, y ya, váyanse. Pero yo corrí con la suerte que solo fue uno.
Caridad says she was lucky that she was raped by only one man. The 13-year-old Haitian girl was attacked by several.
Y entonces, cuando así el hombre me lleva, yo le decía, no me lleves lejos, para allá atrás, que hay muchos hombres. Entonces, cuando yo pasé así, que me iré así, yo vi que la tenían así acostada y otro hombre arriba de ella. Y ella decía, por favor, por favor, por favor. Y había más hombres alrededor, no sé qué más.
Eventually, Caridad reunited with her cousin in the jungle, and they walked for 4.5 days, borrowing food from others. The Haitian girl never made it out of the jungle. She drowned when the group crossed the river. The first time that Caridad mentioned she had been raped in our conversation, she did it casually, as if it were just one more thing that she went through in this extreme journey she was still on. It felt like her mind was in survival mode, like she hadn't really processed everything she had been through. She seemed to be just as sad about having lost her phone while crossing the jungle as having been raped.
Yo tenía la fe de no perderlo porque tenía muchos recuerdos ahí, pero se perdió, ¿qué vamos a hacer? Lo único que no se podía perder era mi vida y gracias a Dios está aquí.
She knows her life is what matters most, and she thanks God that she's still here. Sometimes, Caridad shares some of her journey with the clients at the bar. It entertains them, she says. Dealing with men when they are drunk gets more difficult. Sometimes, they get annoying. Or they might want to spend the night with her.
A ver, ellos a lo mejor se hacen esa imaginación, pero uno no. Yo trato siempre de cambiar los temas.
When that happens, Caridad tries to move the conversation into another direction. She believes there are women who have it harder than her while migrating, mothers who make their journey with their little children. She doesn't have any yet.
Me preocupo que sé que mi familia está bien, que no le va a faltar. Pero mientras no puedo tener un bebé, porque entonces lo que tengo para mi familia, tengo que hacer al bebé, ya no.
Her focus is getting to the United States to work, so that she can make sure her grandparents and her mother are taken care of. Only then she'll feel ready to start her own family, she says. Motherhood can wait.
Coming up on Latino USA, we head to Tenosique in the neighboring state of Tabasco and meet a group of single moms taking the risky choice of migrating with their children. It's a dangerous decision, but is there another option? Stay with us. No te vayas. Before the break, we met Katy and Caridad in Tapachula, two migrant women who are using their bodies to finance their journey north. We're going to move on now to the busy migrant routes along the Usumacinta River, which forms the natural border between Mexico and Guatemala. Part 3, Motherhood, the Body as a Forever Bond. Here's Marta Martinez again.
When media attention grew exponentially around migrant caravans crossing into Mexico and towards the United States in late 2017, Tapachula became the face of Mexico's southern border, a face that became increasingly aggressive. Starting in 2019, military presence increased in the Tapachula area. Former President Donald Trump brokered a deal with Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador to deter migrants from coming to the United States by stopping them early, even before they made it into Mexico. But the move didn't stop migrants. It just led them into tougher routes across the mountains and the jungle. Two of the most used routes right now are on opposite sides of the Usumacinta River, which serves as a natural border between Mexico and Guatemala. Centuries ago, the Usumacinta River was an important trade route for the Mayan civilization, back when rivers were the main way to travel across the jungle. Today, the Usumacinta River is still busy, but for different reasons. At Frontera Corozal, on the Mexican side of the border, tourists used to take colorful boats to visit the Mayan ruins of Yaxchilan. But the pandemic brought tourism to a sudden and unexpected halt. Now, those same boats are busy transporting migrants from the Guatemalan side of the river to the Mexican one. And business is booming. We spoke to one of the lancheros, the men who drive those small boats. The boatman says there are more than 1,000 migrants crossing each day, day and night. And many of them cross with the help of polleros or coyotes. At around 8 p.m. in the evening, when it looked like the river would turn quiet as the sky went dark, a boat arrived on the Mexican docks. A group of some 20 migrants descended. There were several women in the group and at least three little children. A red car awaited them. They seemed to be traveling with a coyote. There was no police or military presence around. People pay as much as $14,000 per person, sometimes even more since the pandemic, to travel with a coyote to the United States, without any guarantee that they'll safely make it into the country. Women tend to travel more with coyotes, experts say, or at least in groups. Guadalupe Arenas heads the migrant program at Médicos del Mundo, an NGO in Tapachula. She says that before 2018, migration in Central America was understood as a purely male phenomenon. But then women started taking the road more. For example, there were a lot of women in the caravans that became more popular in 2018. Guadalupe sees a connection there.
Obviamente ellas no migran solas. Ellas migran acompañadas. Podría ser eso, que en realidad las mujeres tienden a organizarse, a unirse. Siempre ha habido colectivas de mujeres, siempre se han unido. O va con la familia, o va con las amigas, o va con las primas, o va con alguien. Pero no sola.
There have always been women collectives, Guadalupe says. Women tend to get together. When they migrate, they go with family or with friends, but they don't go alone. Guadalupe sees migration as an empowering action, sort of an act of rebellion.
Migrar es una forma de resistencia, ¿no? Es una forma de decir yo no quiero, no quiero esta vida, no puedo seguir así. Y yo creo que el mayor acto de rebeldía es migrar, es no aceptar las condiciones que te está dando tu país y decir yo merezco algo mejor, ¿no?
On the other side of the Usumacinta River, there's La 72, the biggest migrant shelter in southern Mexico. They serve over 13,000 people every year. It's in a relatively small city called Tenosique, in the nearby state of Tabasco, not Chiapas, where we met Amaya and the women of Las Cubanitas. When we visited La 72, the shelter was closed due to a coronavirus outbreak. Over 100 migrants roamed around in the sprawling grass, bigger than a soccer field. They had turned the concrete grandstand into an improvised encampment, where they slept under blue plastic tarps and blankets, or in hammocks. The night before, a storm soaked them, and people were hanging their clothes to dry. There were lots of children running around, playing soccer. And wherever there are migrant children, there are a lot of mothers, often single mothers. We sat down on the grass with three single mothers as the sun started to fade away. They had all requested asylum in Mexico and were waiting for a decision. One of them is Magdalena. She's 21 years old, and she's from a rural area in eastern Guatemala called Los Amates Izabal. As we speak, she holds her daughter Juliana in her arms.
Yo me vine porque me dejé con mi marido hace un año. Él mucho me pegaba. Él me tenía encerrada. No me dejaba salir.
When Magdalena starts talking about her ex-husband and how he used to hit her, her daughter can stand seeing her mother cry, and she begins to cry too. Magdalena's father died when she was 8 years old, and at 10, she started working to help her mother and five siblings.
Yo comencé a trabajar desde los 10 años con mi mamá. Y hemos sufrido bastante. Hay días que aguantábamos hambre y días que no.
Her relationship with her ex-husband was violent from early on. Magdalena wanted to leave him, but then she got pregnant at just 17 years old. He wouldn't let her go anywhere, not even to church. He was wary of every man and even suspected that she was having an affair with the priest. He isolated her from the world.
Tal vez iba a la tienda. Lo mucho que me dilataba eran 5 minutos. Y volvía a regresar. Y si me trataba más, cuando llegaba, él me pegaba, me dejaba morar. No tenía comunicación con mi mamá porque no tenía teléfono.
If she left the house to buy food, she couldn't take more than 5 minutes. If she got home later than that, her husband hit her until her skin was all bruised. She couldn't communicate with her mother because he didn't let her have a phone. One time, her mother saw her with her face bruised and told her to report him to the police. But Magdalena was too scared. He had threatened multiple times to cut her head off with a machete if she spoke out.
Me dijo que fuéramos a la policía. Le dije yo que no, porque él me había amenazado bastante. Y me dijo que con el machete que él tenía me iba a volar la cabeza, que si yo decía algo.
Eventually, Magdalena was able to escape, and she spent some time living with her mother. But he found her and asked her to come back, swearing he would stop hitting her. But it wasn't the first time she had heard that. She decided to leave the country with her daughter, looking for safety and a better future for Juliana.
Ay, yo me vine por la decisión de que él ya no me buscara más, por sacar a mi hija adelante, que mi hija no viva eso, lo que yo viví yo, y para darle un buen futuro a mi hija y ayudarle también a mi mamá, porque ella me dio la vida, me sacó adelante.
Magdalena fled Guatemala with 2 of her sisters, her daughter and her nephew, with only 1 extra set of clothes. On the road, they were lucky. She says they found people who gave them food. Now they work for a man who has a farm. They take care of his garden, clean his house, work the fields. With the money they get from their daily work, they're able to buy some nachos from the food carts by the shelter. Sometimes they don't have enough, but it's still better than having stayed in Guatemala with her ex-husband.
Pues me siento feliz, me siento más segura que vivir allá donde yo estaba.
Here in Tenosique, Magdalena is happy. She feels safer. She says they're going to stay in Tenosique for a while. She wants to go to the U.S. in the future, if possible, but she wants to do it safely.
Para allá arriba es más arriesgado. Dicen que les quitan los niños o los violan o las matan a la mujer, a la mamá y a las niñas también. Lo primero que hacen es secuestrarlas, pedir dinero a los familiares. ¿Y uno qué va a pagar si ni tiene cómo comer, cómo? Entonces mejor estarse aquí uno, tener paciencia, va a sacar todos los papeles y irnos para arriba. Ya cuando esté todo en orden ya.
Magdalena says she's heard that it's more dangerous farther north, that they take the children away, they rape and kill the mothers and the girls. Magdalena says it's best to be patient, get their documents, and then head to the U.S. Kidnappings and disappearances of migrants in Mexico have been on the rise in recent years, and they've also become more violent. According to the country's National Human Rights Commission, 54 migrants are kidnapped every day on average in Mexico. In the case of women, they're often targeted by kidnappers and sexually abused, and sometimes trafficked.
Since about 2016, there's been much more family units, and a lot of the family units are headed by women who are heads of households, and they're on their own with their small, you know, their young children.
This is Gretchen Kuhner again, from the Institute for Women in Migration.
I mean, can you imagine traveling on your own without funds in a place that you don't know, that's scary, with your little children? I mean, I think it leaves a psychological wound on every single person, as well as the children.
These single mothers often carry several children from different fathers. They're the only ones forever in charge of the care and well-being of their kids.
Even if you leave your children behind with a family member, you know, that's still something that's stigmatized. So women are expected to be the caretakers of their children. And that's why they're moving together, because that's the expectation and it's their societal responsibility to do so. And there's no extra support from their government to have any other options except to do that.
For these mothers, taking their children with them when they migrate entails risks, but so does leaving their kids in their home country. And either way, they feel deeply guilty about the decisions they make.
women are really stigmatized. It's just amazing. You know, how could you take your children without any money? Well, how could you not take your children if you're in a dangerous situation and you need to leave? So I think that as a society, we're stigmatizing women and children, and we're not asking the right questions, and we're not providing the right resources.
At the migrant shelter, we also meet Irma. It's not the first time Irma sits on the lawn of La 72. It's her second time leaving Honduras, but this time she's on her own with her two children. Tenosique doesn't bring back good memories. The first time she emigrated, she did it with Arnold, her husband and father of her youngest child. They applied for asylum, and while they waited for a decision, Arnold started working at a local supermarket. One day after his shift, Arnold, Irma, and her 13-year-old ran into some young drunk men on the street. They got into a fight, and one of the men had a knife.
Mm-hmm. Se pelearon y ahí fue que el otro muchacho, pues, sacó su machete y le dio.
They killed Arnold. Irma tried to start from scratch once again in her home country.
Busqué trabajo en una fábrica, busqué trabajo en otra y en otra. Lo poco que hacía no me alcanzaba y ya no podía más. Digo, yo me voy para allá, que por lo menos allá hay trabajo, poco pero seguro.
She looked for jobs at several factories, but the pay was never enough. She felt her only option was to leave again. She had to do it for her children, and for herself, too. She didn't want to get stuck thinking about her late husband.
Es duro lo que digo, pero si yo no lo digo, toda la vida voy a estar escantancada pensando que en el final. Entonces yo dije, no, esto ya quedó atrás. Es duro, pero yo tengo que salir y ser fuertes. Delante de mis hijos, serme fuerte para que ellos no caigan en tal vez en depresión o en otras cosas.
Irma and her children took the same route they had taken the previous time. Everything reminded them of Arnold. But this time, it was harder. Irma felt defenseless.
Más difícil, más como sentirme como desamparada. No por Dios, sino que porque uno está acostumbrado a ver un humano siempre a la par de uno. Y gracias a Dios, pues que migración no me agarró. Pasé rodeando las montañas a medianoche. Dormimos en esos lugares así, bien sólidos, y con mis niños solos.
Irma says they were lucky that migration authorities didn't detain them. They circled mountains in the middle of the night to avoid checkpoints. They slept on the floor until they made it to Tenosique again. Her oldest son is not doing well psychologically. He blames himself for not having done more to save Arnold. But at the shelter, there are psychologists, Irma says, and she's trying to get him help.
Porque él se siente dañado al mirar que él dijo que él no pudo hacer nada. Él se quedó paralizado cuando sucedió eso. Como que la herida ahí está, que solo medio la tocan y él se estanca, él no se siente bien. Él es bien disimula bastante.
None of the single mothers we spoke to in Tenosique knew how long it would take to hear back from COMAR, the Mexican Refugee Commission, about their cases. But something else was clear to them. As soon as they got their papers, they would continue their journey north. Most of the women we spoke to during our reporting believe that migrating when you're a woman is harder than when you're a man. Some said it's scarier because they feel unprotected. Others agreed that they face more risks, like sexual violence or trafficking. Many said their children were their biggest worry, but also their biggest incentive to leave in search for a better future for their families. Women are migrating in new ways, in groups, jumping on buses instead of trains, avoiding shelters and massive places. Ways that we still know or hear little about. In August, Caridad, the Cuban migrant who was working at Las Cubanitas Bar after traveling through 9 or 10 countries, finally made it to the United States, where she plans to start all over again. Many more women are on their way.
This episode was produced by Marta Martinez and Alejandra Sanchez Insunza. It was edited by Andrea Lopez Cruzado and mixed by Julia Caruso. The reporting for this story was supported by the International Women's Media Foundation's Reproductive Health, Rights, and Justice in the Americas initiative. The Latino USA team includes Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Victoria Estrada, Patricia Zulbarán, Jeannie Montalvo, Alejandra Salazar, Reynaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our editorial director is Julio Ricardo Varela. Our supervising senior engineer is Stephanie LeBeau. Additional engineering by Leah Shaw Dameron, with help from Gabriela Baez. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Maria Esquinca. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. The Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
¿No puedo hablar sola? ¿El monólogo?